Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is Monday night, and nothing but more tragedy coming out of Haiti. This morning, it's very interesting. I was watching CNN early in the morning, and I forget which one of their correspondents. I think it was Elizabeth Cohen. Dr. Elizabeth Cohen is one of their health correspondents. She's in Haiti, and she was showing video. Obviously, it was live. It was live feed from Port-au-Prince and the area there. She was showing video of people who are desperately in need of help. This is all we've heard now. We're in the seventh day, and still no large-scale help is there. And the point she was making was that there are no hospitals set up by the Americans. There is nothing there for the trauma centers, and nothing there to handle these terrible wounds that left untreated become gangrenous, and then the people die. People are being pulled from the rubble, their lives are being saved, and then they're left sitting there while the rot devours them and they die. And then her report switched to an Israeli field hospital that has been up and running since day two or three. And the cameras went inside. It was clean. It was quiet. Surgeons were working. They had three or four surgical centers, operating theaters. They had equipment that could only be run by generators, which they were running, including X-ray machines. The Israeli physicians were hard at work, as were the Israeli medical staff, saving people's lives, treating wounds that otherwise would become fatal, that if treated immediately are not fatal. And Elizabeth Cohen then asked a couple of American aid workers who were there, how is it that the Israelis and the Chinese were able to set up field hospitals, and the United States is still dicking around while people are dying? What is this? The Israelis come from 7,000 miles away. The Chinese come from 17,000 miles away. We have military bases in Puerto goddamn Rico. Puerto Rico! The U.S. Navy spent the better part of 30 or 40 years bombing the hell out of Vieques, an island, a part of Puerto Rico, right off the coast. And nobody can, it's astonishing. And then I hear today that the U.S. military has taken over the airport at Port-au-Prince, and a jet transport from France tried to land with portable hospital equipment, was refused permission to land. No. Not that the runways were closed, not that there was no room to put the craft, but was refused permission. I didn't hear what the reason was. And still, have you heard anything yet about the scores and scores of Cuban doctors who are working to save lives in Haiti? Maybe our Secretary of State had another meeting with the President of Haiti. Oh, that would be good, right? Huh? Another meeting. Well, now, we better, yes, we have to address this as quickly as we can. if any more proof is needed that we all have been sold a huge vat of lies and deception about this country, what more proof do you need? Haiti is what? 700 miles? Is it? No, it must be close, further than that. No, I guess it is. 700 miles away from us. It is 7,000 miles away from Israel. It is 17,000 or thereabouts, 12,000 away from China. What is it about this country? We couldn't even take care of the people in New Orleans. And now this. I keep seeing these video clips of huge C-130 transport planes landing from the United States with all kinds of things. And then it sits there. I saw some video, I think it was today, of Marines handing out those goddamn 12-ounce bottles of water. That's it. That's the best the United States Marines could do, making people line up to come up and get their bottle of water. No food, not two bottles, one bottle. And the little Haitian children saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is the United States. This is us. That's it. Jesus Christ, were we sold a bunch of lies, weren't we? Huh? By Democrats and Republicans. Lies. All lies. You dispute it? You dispute it? Meanwhile, these pricks, these useless human beings on right-wing radio, most on Fox and on television, Fox television, continue. How many times did Hannity refer to the race in Massachusetts, which we'll get to tonight, as a political earthquake if Brown, the naked boy, wins? A political earthquake. Three times in the past 6 days, while a real earthquake has taken the lives of tens of thousands. Hannity is a fool. He only can say what's put in front of him by the people who control him. He is also a racist. He is also a Republican, which means he is a liar and a coward. I can't believe this. The Israelis come from 6,000, how far is it? 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 miles away, and have up and running field hospitals while we are still standing there with squads of Marines or platoons of Marines handing out bottles of water on the side of a hill. Oh my God. Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it, my fellow countrymen? Huh? What are we, in the seventh day? When are we going to show up? When Halliburton and KBR and Blackwater and Z and all these other filthy predatory organizations finally are able to develop some kind of chemical to put under their noses to stop the stink of the decaying bodies so they can go down and start making their money? I can't believe it. I 7 days into this, and we still do not have adequate medical personnel. Everything that's being done is being done by people other than people from the United States. Canadians are getting it done. Cubans are getting it done. Israelis, Chinese, Venezuelans, Brazilians. Oh, but we're holding very important meetings, don't you see, between our Secretary of State and the leaders of Haiti. And we're landing the Marines. The Marines are there. And we have a huge, great, big, goddamn aircraft carrier sitting there off the coast. Okay, we're getting ready. We're almost ready. Okay, we're getting ready. We're going to... Okay. Okay, here we come. Yeah, okay. We'll be there soon. Yeah, we're coming. Okay. I can't believe this. Can't believe it. Oh, well. But if you want to continue like a fool, like a Republican, to believe the mythology of the United States being this great savior of humankind, and we can't even take care of our own people when we have a hurricane, we can't assist, we can't even goddamn assist in a fundamental way. When tens of thousands of people are dead, millions are left homeless, a whole country just battered into just heaps of rotting corpses. And what are we doing? Oh, we're coming. Yeah, we're on our way. Okay. Okay, we got it. Yeah, we got it. Okay. We're coming. Yes, sir. We're going to be there. All right. Are we there yet? No. Okay. Well, we're coming. Hey.
truth seekers gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Brad Friedman is going to join us the top of the next hour to talk about the situation in Massachusetts. Email from Greg in Marin County, who says, subject line, why it's taking us a bit more time in Haiti. He quotes Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, quote, after all, we can't deliver the food and water if we don't have a reasonable security situation. So that obviously has to be an element of any work that we're going, that we're doing with the government of Haiti and the UN, end quote. Reasonable security. Oh, I see. Okay. And why is that? Did the Chinese send in Chinese Marines? I don't think so. I realize that the Israeli military, first aid workers and medical personnel are all IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, but did they send in a battalion of troops? I don't think so. Did the Cubans send over some soldiers? I don't think so, unless you consider that some of their doctors are probably in the military to defend against the predations of the United States. Why is it that we have to send troops in order to have a secure or reasonably secure situation for whom? I mean, I'm watching all kinds of white-skinned people down there on the video, most of whom I would assume are American or at least North American, European. They're all white, and they're not surrounded by security forces or security contractors. They're just goddamn saving people's lives. But us? What is it about Haiti now that we have to have reasonable security? What does that mean? Think about it. Go ahead. I dare you to think about it. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, I wonder what Dr. King would think of our first black president. 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan to fight an unwinnable war for the military-industrial complex. Billions of dollars to the huge oversized banks, with very little being paid to working-class people, and the aborting of the public option from what we're being brainwashed to think is revolutionary healthcare reform. And should we even go on social programs to pull people up and out of poverty? And now we're supposed to be all worked up on the fact the Democrats very likely could lose a Senate seat in Massachusetts. Seriously, the Democrats are struggling in Massachusetts? Maybe if Obama and the rest of the Democrats lived up to Dr. King's ideals, we wouldn't be worried about one seat in the U.S. Senate this week. Needless to say, Andy writes, had Dr. King lived, Obama would have broken his heart. I think it would have been broken long before Obama, but this is our Dr. King tribute, Andy's letter. And now, Captain Mary. Reverend King's birthday, January 15th, 3 days ago, was chosen as an appropriate date this year to begin the fifth consecutive season of the CITGO, Venezuela Heating Oil Program, which helped over 200,000 American households survive last winter. In New York City alone, approximately 50,000 families and 39 shelters received assistance. Over 10 million nationwide are likely to need help this winter. Although U.S. congressional officials have asked for help from all major oil companies each year since 2005, not a single U.S. company has been patriotic enough or compassionate enough to step up and help Americans. Not one. Only CITGO from Chavez's so-called leftist Venezuelan has responded. Like Reverend Dr. King did, and like corporatist Exxon doesn't, Venezuela's CITGO has spread some social justice. Captain Mary. Astonishing, isn't it? Do you have any doubt that the mythology of this country that has been carefully fed to you and me and our children and our grandchildren and our parents and our grandparents is a goddamn lie and always has been? Do you doubt it? I realize the Israelis have horrific policy toward the Palestinians. Israel has become an apartheid state. I understand that. China is a military dictatorship that allows a kind of sick capitalism to flourish. I understand that. Cuba has a leftist government that denies human rights to any citizen who has the temerity to speak out and gather a following. I understand that. But so does the whole goddamn world understand that. And I don't think China or Cuba or Israel make any pretense about their miserable internal policies. But us? The United States of America? Why? We're the inspiration to the world, aren't we?
He hears a still small voice whispering in his ear. Something he learned in Bible camp, or maybe from his daddy dear. Do unto others before they do unto you. Praise the Lord and hit 'em hard, the devil must have his due. That's all the weapons of Uncle Sam. The smallpox, Indian blankets, the bombs that beat Japan. Bless the cops and prisons that make us free. This land was made for me, me, me.
To the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. And Cat Mary sent this in too. Venezuela sent a humanitarian aid team of 50 doctors, engineers, search and rescue specialists, civil protection officers, along with vitally needed water, food, medical supplies, and rescue equipment. And more aid is to follow from Venezuela. Cuba, as we talked about last week, towards the end of the week, Cuba had about 300 doctors and paramedics who are already in Haiti, training doctors there and providing, or training paramedical people there, and providing health services for a country long ravaged by predatory capitalism. The Cubans set up a field hospital next to the hospital that had been destroyed by the earthquake. And by Wednesday morning, last Wednesday morning, the earthquake was Tuesday. They had treated over 800 patients. Cuba also sent 30 more doctors, plus medicine, clothes, food, saline solution, plasma bags, and other medical supplies. It also opened its airspace to the United States so that trauma patients can be more quickly evacuated. And of course, the scum bastards at Fox News, we talked about last week, lied that Cuba had given no assistance. You expect that from Fox, though. The U.S. administration, in contrast, has mainly sent money. You got to wonder to whom. And hugely expensive military aid. It costs about $2 million per day to operate an aircraft carrier. If you send one for 2 weeks, there goes about a quarter of the announced U.S. aid of $100 million. Many U.S. military personnel there will do actual aid work in delivering and guarding supplies. But given the United States' long history of military colonial control of Haiti, many will be spending their time to guarantee continued survival of pro-U.S. parasitic political elite who control Haiti. The U.S. administration, of course, has ignored... Many U.S. administrations, all of them, have ignored the long-term ongoing crisis in Haiti, whereas Cuba has been doing the humanitarian work in providing basic health care. The lies are just, the lies about the United States are just, I mean, astonishing. Wouldn't we be better off knowing the truth of our own country? Shouldn't we, at some point, know the truth of our own country? Shouldn't we stop celebrating holidays like Thanksgiving? Shouldn't we, you know, get more honest about, you know, the glorious founders of the country who decided that only white male landowners would have this life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? I mean, is there never a time? When will be the time? We're 230 some years old. When will be the time to inject it into, I'm not talking about Howard Zinn's book. Sure, it's out there. The truth is out there, as they used to say on, X-Files. Yeah, the truth is out there. But when are we going to start teaching it on a fundamental level? Yeah, right, never. By the way, a strong earthquake has hit Guatemala and parts of El Salvador. The U.S. Geological Survey says the quake had a preliminary magnitude of 6.0. It occurred Monday morning, this morning, about 60 miles southwest of Guatemala City. So far, no reports of injuries or damage. But the civil authorities in Guatemala are, quote, still checking, end quote. I don't want to focus an awful lot, I guess, not all at once, on this horror in Haiti. I can't handle it. Can you? We're in the seventh day. Seventh day. And we don't have an onshore operating field hospital. Well, the Chinese, the Cubans, the Israelis, the Venezuelans do. We saw some chuckle nuts in Bill Clinton over the weekend on most of the TV garbage shows, the talk shows. Bob Schieffer interviewed them on Face the Nation. We have a few clips. The first one here describes the special friendship these two sons of bitches now share.
I think some people would be surprised to see you two sitting here together, but a very good source of mine told me, as a matter of fact, that you all often talked while you were president, Mr. Bush, and that you actually developed a very special relationship. Do you think of yourself now as friends?
Yeah, I do. Me too.
And did you talk often?
I don't know about often, but I called him. He didn't call me because he knows how busy a president is. Yeah. I called him. And we chatted on occasion.
I was always pleased when he called me. I'd make it a practice never to bother the president. I don't call President Obama either. I don't think it's, you know, you got plenty to do. But
you don't have to. Your wife is Secretary of State.
Honest, good friendship. And we've made our disagreements respectful, and we've had a good time doing it. And
my mother calls me my fourth brother. Calls him my fourth brother.
My mother calls me my fourth brother, he says. Don't you miss this dumb bastard, huh? And there sits Bill Clinton between the two, these two guys, these two miserable white guys sitting there between the two of them in the 16 years that they ran this country. They completed the destruction started by Ronald Reagan. George Herbert Walker Bush was just somebody who set up drug deals all over Central America. But between these two, Clinton and Bush, over 16 years, they absolutely, look around you. Look goddamn around you. What you see in this country and in our foreign policy, what you see is a direct result of 16 years of Clinton and Bush. Forget Obama. He's been there 1 year. And he's afraid of his own shadow. Forget him. But there those two sat. I goddamn near puked blood Sunday watching that. I couldn't believe it. Mensa man then got to use one of his favorite lines about people watching tragic things on their TVs. God, I miss hearing him speak, don't you? Then both presidents discussed Limbaugh's comments about donating to Haiti.
Is this, what we're seeing here today, a culmination of the relationship that you developed during those years?
I don't think so. I think it really is two guys that want to help channel compassion in a proper direction. I mean, want to help the American people deal with the tragedy they've seen on their television screens down there in Haiti.
There's been an overwhelming outpouring of support by the American people for this, but not in every quarter. Rush Limbaugh said, for example, that President Obama might try to use this for political means to shore up support for himself in the black community. And he said, we've already donated to Haiti. They call it the U.S. income tax. What's your response to that?
Oh, I don't have any. You know, I think we should. It's not fruitful to get involved in that. The Haitian people.
Oh, my God.
Are working. They're in desperate shape. And before they were in desperate shape, they were on the way to building a modern society. And I need to try to help them.
What would you say to that, Mr. President?
I say now's not the time to focus on politics. It's time to focus on helping people. I mean, look, you got people who are children who've lost their parents. People wonder whether they're going to be able to drink water. And there's a great sense of desperation. And so my attention is on trying to help people deal with the desperation.
Oh my God! Do you get it? Do you? 16
what,
years.
What lesson?
16 years of these two, and the destruction, the global debris, the dying, starving people, the economy's totally goddamn wrecked, the U.S. economy destroyed, jobs gone. Poverty just out of control, homelessness, and that's not just here. And there they sit, those two. We have one more that we'll wait till after the break. Bob Schieffer asks, what lessons George W. Bush learned from Katrina, try not to laugh, that he can apply to mitigate this crisis. Schieffer actually asked George W. Bush that question. We'll play it for you when we come back. But it just hit me. It knocked the wind out of me. Sunday morning, there they are. 16 years of Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, and you're looking at the result all over the globe.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Excuse me. All right. Last, Bob Schieffer asked what lessons this psychopathic George W. Bush learned from Katrina. He honestly asked that. He said, what lessons do you take away from Katrina? Here's Schieffer.
What lessons do you take away from Katrina that you can apply?
Well, first of all, there's great compassion. People are going to want to help, and you just got to make sure the help is channeled in the right direction. The immediate crisis is not going to be solved by the fund that we're setting up. The immediate crisis is going to be solved by the United States government, along with other governments, effectively dealing with the food shortage, the information shortage, the water shortage, the security situation. We want to be around to help on the rebuilding aspects.
Uh-huh.
And, the lesson I've learned on all the crises or catastrophes during my presidency was people want to help. And that's why when the president asked me to join with Bill to create a mechanism where they could help, I was happy to do so. And by the way, it happens to be at Clinton Bush, HaitiFund.org.
He says, yeah, the U.S. government, the immediate crisis is going to be solved by the U.S. government. But that's not what neo-Nazis like you believe in, George. Oh, I see. That's right. You want the U.S. government to go feed and water and repair the people down there that U.S. government policy has assisted in destroying. And then he says, we want to be around to help on the rebuilding aspects of this. You heard it. You heard him say it. You heard him say it. And he says, the lesson I've learned from all the crises or catastrophes during my presidency. What crises? What catastrophes? Karen Hughes and what's his name? Giuliani and all these people say nothing happened bad on your watch, Mr. Son of a Bitch. What catastrophes? What crises? The biggest lesson he says he learned was that, you know, people want to help. People want to help. Yeah, people want to help. First, you know, let's get the government down there to, you know, make it safe for Halliburton and KBR and Dick Cheney to come down. Last one. Finally, Schieffer chatted with them about ensuring the donations actually went to the Haitians. This is the Rush Limbaugh comment.
Is there a structure in place, I would ask both of you, to ensure that this money gets to the people? I mean, how can people be certain that this money is going to go to the people?
Well, right now, it's interesting you say, you know, because when the U.N. system broke down after, you know, because our headquarters was destroyed there and I was working for the U.N., I set up an emergency fund on my website just to stand for them. Right now, we know who's down there and who's good. Anybody gives us money now, we're going to flow it right through there. Dr. Paul Farmer's group, they've got medical people down there. You want to go to medical help, you can give it to them. CARE is on the ground. They're good. The UNICEF supplies are being delivered. They're reliable. So we don't have any real problems now. What we need now is quick pass through in the most effective ways.
Yeah, one of my concerns, Bob, is that during these crises, all of a sudden, all these kind of fake organizations pop up, and well-meaning people are misled. And I know President Obama's concerned about that as well. So, you know, we're a safe haven. And the other thing we're going to do is rely upon people who know what they're doing down in Haiti. There'll be Haiti-specific expertise.
Haiti-specific expertise. What does that mean, dumb bastard? The problems in Haiti are unique? Haiti-specific? What does that mean? And he says, you know, during these crises, Bob, all of a sudden all these kind of fake organizations, you know, kind of like Kellogg Brown and Root, they pop up and well-meaning people are misled. I'll be a son of a bitch. How much money was it determined that the Pentagon had lost the day before 9/11, on 9/10, what was it? A trillion? 2 trillion? Remember that? Of course you don't. Neither do I. Somebody sent it to me, though. Remember that? People were saying, hey, wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's this? A trillion? 2 trillion? Missing from the Pentagon? Is that what you mean by fake organizations, you dumb bastard? And then all of a sudden, that story disappeared, didn't it? Along with the Gary Condit story. Just gone. Same day. Next day. When those swarthy Arabs attacked the United States. Fake organizations. You know, they pop up and well-meaning people are misled. Yeah. We've seen that, Bob. You know, on my website, I set up a fund on my website just to stand for the UN because, you know, I was working for them. And right now we know who's good down there. And you know, it's not that, what was that, Aristide? I tried to get him back in, but George here, this psycho son of a bitch, had him taken out again, you know, just like his goddamn father. But, you know, I'm supposed to be the fourth brother of this tribe of goddamn psychopaths. Are you kidding me, Bob? Jesus Christ. I don't mind helping, but brother, where's Hillary? So I'm a bitch. She's out of the country? Good. Keep her out. I don't like her. I just don't like her, man. You seen her lately? I guess it's all that flying around, but son of a bitch. People talk about me going after this young stuff. Well, what the hell would you do, Bob? You're old like I am, right? Oh, wait a minute. I digress. Where were we? Oh, that's right. I set up on my website a UN thing, you know, emergency fund, and I'm not going to steal the money. Jesus Christ, I got more money than I ever thought I'd have. You know, I'm just a dumb mountain person from Arkansas. I don't know a damn thing. I was president for 8 years. I really did it good, didn't I, huh? And then George here, he finished up. God damn, I wounded the son of a bitch. That'd be the United States. And George put the knife right in its heart. God damn, aren't we a power? It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Senate race in Massachusetts has taken an ugly turn. There's a video circulating now in which the Republican Scott Brown, who has stayed way beneath the radar with his particular views, this is another one of these crazy evangelicals who doesn't believe in evolution. It's astonishing that Massachusetts is about to elect this guy. But he smiles in this video. He smiles at a violent sexist taunt directed at Martha Coakley, the Democrat, the Attorney General, at a rally. You don't see the guy off camera, but Brown is standing there at some kind of a rally. He's holding a bullhorn, and somebody shouts, "Shove a curling rod up her butt!" And Brown seems to smile and nod in acknowledgement. The guy shouting it's in reference to a sexual abuse case involving a curling iron that critics say Coakley, as Attorney General, did not aggressively prosecute. But to suggest that the Republican shove a curling iron up the anal sphincter of the Democrat, who happens to be a woman, and the Republican didn't say it, but for him to stand there and smile and grin, I don't think this country can sink any lower in the political system. I mean, it's one thing to make political charges, whether they're true or not. But this? And it's not just this. There's so much that Brown has said that, you know, this charge that he's now made, that Brown has agreed to a charge by one of these teabag psychopaths that Barack Obama is a bastard, that his mother and father weren't married. He voted against aid to workers from Boston who went to New York to assist in the 9/11 cleanup and aid and recovery. And he voted against it because he said it was too expensive. Brown did. At the same time, he was trying to fund a golf course in his district and give tax subsidies to corporations. This is not shocking stuff. This is Republican stuff, I'm telling you. Do you understand? He tried to deny emergency contraception to rape victims. He claimed he didn't know anything about the Tea Parties, although he's appeared at their rallies and publicized fundraisers. I've said before, every Republican office holder is a liar and a coward and a miserable son of a bitch who believes in talking snakes and the earth is the center of the universe. He wants a constitutional ban on gay marriage. He doesn't think the banks that we bailed out with our tax money should have to pay a fee for all they got. And this is the guy that Massachusetts is about to elect?
I just have a question. If Barack Obama, during his Senate campaign in Illinois, if it had been revealed that he posed nude for a women's magazine when he was in law school, how quickly you think Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh'd be on top of that story?
Well, they wouldn't have just been on top of the story.
What would they have called him?
Faggot?
Other than centerfold. I mean, seriously.
They would have called him a faggot. They would have said that everybody knows that Playgirl magazine is not really for women. It's for homosexuals.
Okay, well, this was Cosmo. He's still naked.
Or Cosmo,
this
yeah.
Is, you know, there's just a couple of staples there that leaves anything to the imagination. It's a full Burt Reynolds spread, if you know what I'm talking about. Good-looking guy, but...
You sound very enthusiastic about the photograph.
I was shocked. I thought it was Photoshopped. Someone emailed it to me, and I thought, okay, that's hilarious. You know, family values, Republican, senatorial
candidate. No, oh, stop. Republican. There's not a Republican out there that's family values. They are criminal sons of bitches, every one of them. Brad Friedman joins us now. Hey, Brad.
Hey, guys. How are you? You're talking me into voting for Scott Brown there with all that talk.
Yeah, I'll bet.
and I probably do it from out here in Los Angeles, actually.
What? First of all, we don't have very good connection, but we'll try to muscle through here. I got a couple of emails from people who, you know, I always get this from listeners who say, you've got to go look at Brad Friedman's website. Why don't you send me an email once in a while when you have these dynamite stories? You know, I get it from the listeners, but that's all right. The interview you had about Diebold is going to handle the vote count on this election? That's not real.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, it's very real. Diebold, for pretty much about 90% of the state, yeah, it's going to be Diebold voting machines once again counting this damn election. And to make matters worse, there's a company by the name of LHS Associates, which sells services and programs those Diebold machines across the state and across all of New England. And they have a criminal background. One of their senior guys had a narcotics conviction about 10 years ago. He actually got thrown out of the state of Connecticut after he came by the Brad blog a couple of years ago and made some unbelievably obnoxious and obscene comments. They've admitted to changing memory cards, breaking the law by changing memory cards in the middle of an election. And, you know, this is just more of the same that I've been running around with my hair on fire for years trying to tell people, wake up, pay attention. By the time we're done with this election, let's presume that will be Tuesday night, and one of the two candidates will probably rush to a podium to concede. By the time that happens, not a single paper ballot in the state of Massachusetts will have been counted by anything but a Diebold computer.
And this is where Diebold is at its evil best in elections that are very close.
We've got, for folks who haven't seen it, there's a film documentary out there that was on HBO, Emmy-nominated, called Hacking Democracy.
Right.
And I've got the link to the crucial scene at my website and over at the Governor Times, which is an upstate New York paper where I ran my article on this. By the way, they are a far right-wing newspaper. Mm-hmm. But even they are waking up after what happened in the New York 23 race. They're waking up and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, these guys like Brad Friedman may have been onto something. Anyway, the clip shows how you can take a Diebold paper ballot election, and that's the good news. There will be paper ballots across the state. Mm-hmm. But how you can take that paper ballot election and flip it to say any damn thing you want unless you bother to count the ballots. And that's what we're dealing with, and I keep trying to tell folks, and they say, oh, there's no touchscreens in Massachusetts. Everything is fine. Well, wrong. It's not fine because nobody is going to be counting the ballots unless the candidates themselves demand that there be a hand count after the election. There's not even an audit. In Boston, they don't even do a post-election audit. A lot of places will do a sample. They'll count by hand, you know, 1 or 2%. They're going to count 0% of these ballots. This election will be decided by Diebold and this criminal company, LHS Associates.
We just don't seem to care. I mean, you care. I care, I guess. Although it's getting harder and harder for me to care one way or the other, which Democrat or Republican wins these elections. But it seems like the voters in Massachusetts, surely they know about what you just said, that it'll be paper ballots, but yeah, they'll be counted by Diebold with no accounting. Hold on a second, Brad. Let me put you on hold. We got to take a break, but I want to ask you about that. The people in Massachusetts must just not care. I'm not talking about whether they want Brown or Coakley to win or lose or whatever. They don't care about the system.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. We're talking to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, who also is kind enough to substitute for me on a regular basis on this program. Getting back to that question, Brad, do the people of Massachusetts, they must be aware of this, do they not care?
You know, I don't think they really are aware of it. In fact, I've gotten notes since I ran my original article the other day at Governor Times on this, and I got notes back from people who said, "Oh, I'm a poll worker. It's impossible to mess with these machines. They're sealed. The memory cards have seals on them. We do tests on them." You know, again, I'd urge people to look at that clip. You can go to YouTube and find it. Even Hacking Democracy 9 of 9, and you'll see how easy it is to mess with these machines, flip an election in such a way that you will never even know it's been flipped unless you bother to count the paper ballots. So I think it's a combination of they're uninformed, and that's true all across this country still, because nobody talks about this. Instead, they talk about this this acorn nonsense, and instead of the real threat where you can have one guy sit down, flip an entire election without notice. Mm-hmm. So I think they would care if they understood the issue. As I said, you know, a lot of other people wrote to me and said, hey, I vote in Massachusetts and we use paper ballots. What are you talking about, Brad? Mm-hmm. You know, as if they don't understand what can be done with paper ballots when you don't count them. And I feel like I'm talking to a third grader or something when I keep having to say, you must count the ballots once you have them. But that's what you got to do. Why they don't care, you know, I think it's largely because they don't know. If they understood the vulnerabilities in this system, if they understood this company, this LHS Associates, I mean, this filthy company and the way they've operated, and we've got them, like I say, on air admitting that they've come in. One of these guys said, quote, "We don't follow every little law."
Yeah, oh,
and then he explained, he said it's on air, and he wasn't embarrassed.
Who granted this company the contract, Brad? Well, I mean, Martha Coakley is the state attorney general.
Yep. Well, she probably, I don't know if she approved it. It was probably the Secretary of State, Bill Galvin.
I'm sorry. My bad. Yeah, that's right. It would be a Secretary of State, although is he a Democrat? Is he a he?
He is a he. I believe he is a Democrat. And I mean, LHS is all across New England. This is the same company we had to deal with. You may remember, I believe I was on your show talking about it back in New Hampshire.
Right.
The primary election, when, you know, Barack Obama should have won and actually did win in all of the 40% of the precincts where they counted by hand, but where they counted by Diebold optical scanners, the same ones they're going to be using tomorrow. Hillary Clinton beat Barack Obama by almost exactly reversed percentages. Now, again, maybe there was a reason for that back then, but wouldn't you like to know if that's really the way the voters voted? So, yeah, they approved him. Secretary of State approved him all throughout New England. When this guy, his name is Mike Hajar, he's one of their senior sales directors and a childhood friend of the owners. He showed up at Brad Blog a couple of years ago, went on this tirade in comments, and the Secretary of State of Connecticut, to her credit, saw this and said, "You are not welcome to work in the state of Connecticut anymore." Now, the company is still there, but this guy is barred from working there, and he's the one who pled guilty to narcotics trafficking about 10 years ago.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, I'm reasonably sure tomorrow night you're going to be in demand, but if you have a chance tomorrow, if you could check in with us, I assume the polls in Massachusetts close like most states around 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the closing time, but I will try to check for you.
Okay, and hopefully you can check in with us about the same time tomorrow night as you did tonight. All right.
Let's give it a shot. Thank you, brother.
Brad, thanks for the information, and I hope people in Massachusetts are listening. We are carried by a Boston affiliate now. Keep up the work. That's all I can say. If it weren't for you and a handful of other people, nobody would know about this stuff. So you, Greg Palace, and a few more, bless your heart.
Let me give a shout out over to blackboxvoting.org, where they've got, Bev Harris has a list of action items that folks in Massachusetts can do to try to protect the election tomorrow.
All right.
Even though it's tough.
All right. Thanks a lot for checking in, Brad.
Thanks, amigo.
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. You know, the issue of who wins that election is very material. I mean, it really is. I don't know anything about Martha Coakley. Is that her first name? I don't know anything about Brown. What's his first name? Jerkwad? I have no idea about these people except what I have read and what I've seen in some of these video clips. I do know that he is a fundamentalist freak who, is a typical Republican, a liar and a coward. Coakley, I don't know. But it would seem to me that the people of Massachusetts would at least want their election to be honest. Well, maybe not.
Not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Got an email here from John in Raleigh regarding Citgo. Mike, here in Raleigh, North Carolina, there has been a Citgo station that I've patronized since moving here in the late 80s. The station sits adjacent to the country club part of Raleigh, and the road that passes by heads into downtown and the state legislative building complex. Over Christmas, I drove to the station to get diesel fuel and saw that the place was receiving an apparent makeover. And when I checked back a few days later, the station was changed to Marathon Oil. And speaking with the owner of the station, who was there when I stopped, she said that she got tired of having state legislators and local Raleigh attorneys stopping by to tell her that they would not patronize a station selling Chavez gas. So after she heard this enough times, she determined to switch from Citgo to Marathon. I guess those legislators and attorneys didn't know about the Chavez Citgo Oil Assistance Program to the Northeast. And, of course, no Raleigh news station has anything about this on the air, John and Raleigh. I'm sure the legislators and the attorneys do know about it, John. And that's one of the reasons I would imagine they refuse to patronize. The legislators in Raleigh and the attorneys in Raleigh, the ones I'm sure you're referencing in your email, are all about predatory capitalism. They're not about social democracy or social justice. Regarding our relief to Haiti, that is, the government relief is not getting there. Somebody emailed me tonight and said, well, what about the Los Angeles Fire Department? They had that video today that I saw also, the collapsed bank, where the man's wife, who had been trapped under there for, I say the man's wife, because he was frantic. He thought she might be there. He was a prominent piece of the video until they finally got to her. They found her alive and in fairly good condition. Six and a half days under this thing. And they pulled her out alive. Those were L.A. County Fire Department members, firefighters. So, yeah, Sarah, who sent me the email, sure, there are some real acts of heroism being conducted by private organizations that are going from the United States. But the government response, that's what I'm talking about, the government response. And regarding that, Bruce writes, we simply don't have those resources we once had. We've become dependent on China to provide everything. If we want to help Haiti, we need to have the aid drop shipped from China. Oh God, and put it on the credit card. We have $4 trillion in unfunded infrastructure repairs in this country. The Republicans held their RNC in the same way, where they allowed an interstate bridge to collapse. It will take decades to put America back to 1980 standards if we get started today, and that doesn't seem to be happening. There was a story today that I won't say it completely freaked me out, but it came damn close to it. This is from ABC Television News. You know, Brian Ross, one of their chief investigator. How about firearms for Jesus? Have you heard about this? There is a company in the United States, in Michigan. Trijicon. And they have over $500 million. It's $660 million multi-year contract to provide for the Marine Corps and the Army 800,000 high-powered rifle sights, scopes. On the scopes, references to New Testament Bible passages about Jesus Christ are inscribed. The sights are used by U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan to kill people because that's, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before. There's no reason to pretend that any military's prime directive is to rebuild things. To the contrary, the prime directive of any military, once it is activated, is to kill and destroy. And when you have two competing militaries, the one that kills and destroys the most is usually the winner. U.S. military rules specifically prohibit the proselytizing of any religion in Iraq or Afghanistan. And those rules were drawn up, they're recent, in order to prevent criticism that the U.S. was embarked on a religious crusade in its war against global Islam. Oh, it's not a war against global Islam? It isn't? A lot of people seem to think so. One of the citations on the gun site reads 2 Cor 4:6. Well, any idiot who's ever read the Bible knows what that means. 2 Corinthians 4:6 in the New Testament, which reads, quote, "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." Other references include citations from the book of Revelation. John 8:12, referred to on the gun site, says JN 8:12, reads, quote, "Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life," end quote. Now, the company, Trigicon, confirmed to ABC News that it adds the biblical quotes to the site sold to the U.S. military. The director of sales and marketing for this company said the inscriptions, quote, "have always been there," end quote, and said there was nothing wrong or illegal with adding them. The spokesperson said the issue was being raised by a group that is, quote, "not Christian," end quote. The company's vision is described on its website as follows, quote, "Guided by our values, we endeavor to have our products used wherever precision aiming solutions are required to protect individual freedom. We believe that America is great when its people are good. This goodness has been based on biblical standards throughout our history, and we will strive to follow those morals," end quote. Protect individual freedom? The killing of people in Iraq? Afghanistan? Vietnam? El Salvador? Guatemala? Nicaragua? Oh, Jesus, why bother? That was about protecting individual freedom? You're kidding. So one assumes the obvious here. You look down the scope, through the scope of your rifle, and as you bring it up to your face, you can have a quick reference to Jesus Christ, the blood-soaked, demonic, crazed demon that wants you to kill. Right? That's not what Jesus is about. Then why are references to him on a gun sight? Oh, never mind. It gets very confusing. Spokespeople of the Army and the Marine Corps both said their services were unaware of the biblical markings. Have you ever seen a movie, or maybe you've been in the military in basic training, where, you know, this is my rifle, this is my gun, this is for killing, this is for fun, and you are taught to break your rifle down very quickly and reassemble it very quickly. And if you do not do that, your drill instructor may kick your ass up around your shoulders. And we are to believe that the United States Marine Corps and the United States Army has been totally unaware of strange markings on the goddamn gun sight. Oh, no! You're kidding me! They're there? The the company said the practice began under its founder, Glenn Bindon, a devout Christian who was killed in a 2003 plane crash. This is 2010, roughly 7 years. And nobody in the Marine Corps, no drill instructor, no soldier, no Marine putting together, breaking down and putting back together his rifle has ever looked at his scope, his sight, and seen something like JN8:12, and didn't say, "Sir, Sergeant, sir, what does this mean, sir?" Never. Not once.
Up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, so just when you think it couldn't get any more bizarre than it already is, we find out that high-powered rifle sights provided to the United States military by a Michigan company has coded references to New Testament Bible passages about Jesus Christ. And as our military affairs correspondent asked me, what happened to the Prince of Peace idea? Well, we know what happened to that. A photo on a Department of Defense website shows Iraqi soldiers being trained by U.S. troops with rifles equipped with the Bible-coded sights. Mikey Weinstein, who I've had on this program, a Republican, a military veteran, if that's not redundant, and also the founder of Military Religious Freedom, the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, advocacy groups that a group that tries to preserve the separation of church and state and the military, said it's wrong. It violates the Constitution. It violates a number of federal laws. Weinstein went on to say, quote, it allows the Mujahideen, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and the insurrectionists and jihadists to claim they're being shot by Jesus rifles. End quote. Weinstein, who's an attorney and former Air Force officer, said many members of his group who currently serve in the military have complained about the markings on the sites. He also claims that they've told him, active military personnel have told him that commanders have referred to weapons with the sights as spiritually transformed firearms of Jesus Christ. Right? Oh my God. In July 2009, last July, this company won a new contract, $33 million Pentagon contract for a new machine gun optic, according to Defense Industry Daily. And the company's earnings from the U.S. military jumped significantly after 2005 when it won a $660 million long-term contract to supply the Marine Corps with gun sights. Weinstein says, quote, this is probably the best example of violation of the separation of church and state in this country. It's literally pushing fundamentalist Christianity at the point of a gun against the people we're fighting. And as a result, we're emboldening an enemy, end quote. Who would Jesus kill? You know, what... just when you think it couldn't get any crazier, a story like this, and this has been going on for 7 years. U.S. military weaponry inscribed with secret Jesus Bible codes. Oh, my God. I don't know. What are you going to say? Quick email here from Brad. He writes in, Mike, I should have mentioned regarding the Massachusetts special election tomorrow night, or tomorrow. I should have mentioned that folks need to let their candidate know, presumably Coakley in this case, to not concede until all ballots are actually counted. On election night in New York, Doug Hoffman, the conservative candidate in that case, had lost, quote, quote, by 5,000 votes, and he conceded. 48 hours later, the margin was down to about 2,000 votes once the op scan errors had begun to be noticed. But the media and everyone else had moved on by then. And, of course, remember the same thing happened when Kerry conceded the next day before all the votes were counted in Ohio. So Brad writes, tell the candidates, and he puts this in caps, do not concede until all ballots are actually counted. And he's not just talking about Coakley. He's talking about the psychopath, too. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico writes, quite apart from the overtly ludicrous notion of Bible verses on instruments designed to kill others, someone at the Pentagon seems not to be telling the truth, you know, about not knowing about it. Now, maybe since the Bushies got in, the military doesn't bother to check conformity to contract, but standard practice, even in commercial industry, is to receive what's known as a first article, the first thing you're going to get from this company, and give it a thorough inspection to see if it conforms to the specifications provided. Deviance from specifications isn't tolerated. Someone let this slide, probably out of religious bias, and is yet one more indication that there is an ongoing transformation of the military into a bunch of religious freaks. The more interesting question is, if Trigicom got the contract over others in the first place because of their practice of inserting biblical references in the item, if that was known inside Pentagon procurement. I'd be willing to bet you it was known, don't you think? Of course. The militarization of religion, the corporatization of our electoral system. And Bruce writes, do they use that on just the gun sights, or do they use it on the belt buckles? The buckles that say, Gott mit uns. You remember where that's from, don't you? Stay with us. We'll be back. I'm Mike Molloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Greg Palast, writing in the Huffington Post, had a very interesting piece today, and I want to share it with you. He says, bless the president for having rescue teams in the air to Haiti almost immediately. President Olafur Grimason of Iceland. On Wednesday, the AP reported that the president of the United States promised, quote, the initial contingent of 2,000 Marines could be deployed to the quake-ravaged country within the next few days, end quote. In a few days? Second idea, there's no such thing as a natural disaster. 200,000 Haitians have been slaughtered by slum housing and International Monetary Fund austerity plans. Three, a friend of mine called. Do I know a journalist who could get medicine to her father? And she added, trying to hold her voice together, my sister, she's under the rubble. Is anyone going who can help? Is there anyone? Should I tell her Obama will have the Marines there in a few days? Four, China deployed rescuers with sniffer dogs within 48 hours. China, Mr. President, China, 8,000 miles away. Miami, 700 miles. U.S. bases in Puerto Rico, right there. Number five, Obama's Defense Secretary Robert Gates said, quote, I don't know how this government could have responded faster or more comprehensively than it has, end quote. Well, we know Gates doesn't know. Six, from my own work in the field, I know that FEMA has access to ready-to-go potable, which is it, Kathy, potable or potable? Potable. I know that FEMA has access to ready-to-go potable water, generators, mobile medical equipment, and more for hurricane relief on the Gulf Coast. It's all still there. Army Lieutenant General Russell Honore, who served as a task force commander for emergency response after Hurricane Katrina, told the Christian Science Monitor, quote, I thought we had learned that from Katrina. Take food and water and start evacuating people, end quote. Maybe we learned it, but apparently Gates and the Defense Department missed school that day. Seven, send in the Marines. That's America's response. That's what we're good at. The aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson finally showed up after 3 days with what? Well, it was dramatically deployed without any emergency relief supplies. It has Sidewinder missiles and 19 helicopters. Eight. But don't worry, the international search and rescue team, fully equipped and self-sufficient for up to 7 days in the field, deployed immediately with 10 metric tons of tools and equipment, 3 tons of water, tents, advanced communications equipment, and water purifying capability. By the way, they're from Iceland. Nine. Gates wouldn't send in food and water because, he said, there was no, quote, structure to provide security, end quote. For Gates, appointed by Bush and allowed to hang around by Obama, it's security first. That was his lesson from Hurricane Katrina. Black water before drinking water. 10. Previous U.S. presidents have acted far more swiftly in getting troops on the ground on that island. Haiti is the right half of the island of Hispaniola. It's treated like the right testicle of hell. The Dominican Republic, the left. In 1965, when Dominicans demanded the return of Juan Bosch, their elected president, deposed by a junta, Lyndon Johnson reacted to this crisis rapidly, landing 45,000 U.S. Marines on the beaches to prevent the return of the elected president. 11. How did Haiti end up so economically weakened? With infrastructure from hospitals to water systems busted or non-existent. There are 2 fire stations in the entire nation. An infrastructure so frail that the nation was simply waiting for nature, quote, quote, to finish it off. Well, don't blame Mother Nature for all this death and destruction. That dishonor goes to Papa Doc and Baby Doc the Duvalier dictatorship, which looted the nation for 28 years. Papa and baby put an estimated 80% of world aid into their own pockets, with the complicity of the U.S. government happy to have the Duvaliers and their voodoo militia Tonton Macou as allies in the Cold War. And that war was easily won. The Duvaliers' death squads murdered as many as 60,000 opponents of the regime. 12. What Papa and Baby didn't run off with, the IMF finished off through its austerity plans. An austerity plan is a form of voodoo orchestrated by economists, zombified by an irrational belief that cutting government services will somehow help a nation prosper. 13. In 1991, 5 years after the murderous baby doc fled, Haitians elected a president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who resisted the IMF's austerity diktats. Within months, the military, to the applause of Papa George H.W. Bush, deposed him. History repeats itself, first as tragedy, then as farce. The farce was George W. Bush. In 2004, after the priest Aristide was reelected president, he was kidnapped and removed again, to the applause of Baby Bush. 14. Haiti was once a wealthy nation, the wealthiest in the hemisphere, worth more, wrote Voltaire in the 18th century, than that rocky, cold colony known as New England. Haiti's wealth was in black gold, slaves. But then the slaves rebelled and have been paying for it ever since. From 1825 to 1947, France forced Haiti to pay an annual fee to reimburse the profits lost by French slaveholders. The loss caused by their slaves' successful uprising. Rather than enslave individual Haitians, France thought it more efficient to simply enslave the entire nation. 15. Secretary Gates tells us, quote, there are just some certain facts of life that affect how quickly you can do some of these things, end quote. The Navy's hospital boat will be there in, a week or so. Heck of a job, Brownie. 16. Note just received from my friend. Her sister was found dead, and her other sister had to bury her. Her father needs his anti-seizure medicines. That's a fact of life, too, Mr. President. Greg Pallast. Oops, writing at Huffington Post today. It really did. Do you agree that we've just been told a whole bunch of lies? No? We have a break here, and when we come back, we will take your phone calls. The number is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to make some comments. 877-996-2556. About the situation in Haiti or tomorrow's election in Massachusetts or... What else we talked about tonight? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. I've gotten a couple of emails more than a couple, since this tragedy in Haiti has unfolded. And we've been talking about it on this program, which goes back three or four days into last week. And the gist of the emails is, if all you're going to do is sit there and complain, what's the point? Why don't you offer up some solutions? Well, oh, God, where do I start? I've said on this program 1,000 times, I don't have solutions to these problems. And neither, apparently, does the President of the United States, the Congress of the United States, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. It's always just mildly amusing and a little bit irritating to me when I get emails from people that say, well, if you're going to bitch and complain, why don't you offer solutions? That's crazy. That's crazy. That's not, this is a 25 cent per program talk show on the radio. That's what it costs to subscribe to our podcast. It's a 2-bit radio program. That's what we do here. Regular listeners know that I've never set myself up as an expert and will not, because I am not one. There are a lot of people on radio who consider themselves to be experts and they have the answers. This is not that program, one of those programs. I've made that very clear. If you are looking for solutions, then there are other places to go to. This program is about observing or listening to or watching what's occurring and then commenting on it. If somebody wants to find some nice, uplifting, positive things for your humble and obedient servant here to talk about regarding, in the present instance, the tragedy in Haiti, send it to me. Of course, it doesn't exist. That's the point. The program is not Pollyanna-ish. I wish that, somebody asked me, well, don't you have any hope? And I talked about this Friday. Sure, I have hope. Of course I do. But that hope is not in the global leadership that's available right now, and I don't care what the country is. It's just not there. I mean, the people of this planet can't even get together and decide how to balance the so-called pursuit of happiness, whether that happiness is massive ownership of junk like we do in this country, or that happiness is food to eat like is the case in so many countries. We can't balance any of that with controlling the amount of garbage we dump into not just the atmosphere, but our oceans and every place else. I'm going to find hope where? To me, the only hope there is what I mentioned last week. If some event or discovery or invention occurs that totally revolutionizes our way of thinking, sure, I hold out that hope all the time. But the criticisms that a lot of people find very hard to take on this program, criticisms of just about everything that has occurred in U.S. foreign policy for the past 120 years, they're not criticisms. They're statements of fact. They're statements of historical fact. If they're interpreted as criticisms of this wonderful, glorious United States of America, well, what would you have me do? Change it? No, that's what you get on other radio programs. You want me to be a revisionist and not tell you the truth? No, that's what we get in school. That's what I got in school my entire educational career until I got to university. And even then, it was colored and tainted. Every single thing we are taught is a lie. I mean, if you disagree with that, show me where. Show me where what you were taught in school is the truth and not a lie. Where it concerns U.S. foreign policy, where it concerns the founding of this country. You know, several years ago, I started using the phrase that this country was founded on genocide and racism. And I'm sorry, genocide and slavery. Oh, my God, people went out of their crawl spaces with that one. Get this commie son of a bitch off the air! And yet it's true. You know, I don't come on this program and say things that are not true. Not that they're true because I say them. No, they're true because they're part of our history. I'm just an observer. So, to everybody who's been sending emails about my attitude or my reportage, such as it is, since this Haiti thing started, or any other issue, where you are suggesting that I'm so negative or I don't see the good being done, I've said over and over and over again, when I'm talking about relief efforts to Haiti and the lack thereof, I'm talking about the U.S. government response. Of course, there are some private organizations that are trying, and they will not succeed at what has to be done. If they were succeeding, we would not have people being pulled from the wreckage by the Los Angeles Fire Department, for example, and then they lay on the street and die from their injuries. You do understand what I'm saying, right?
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Take a long walk through a company town. On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get sized down.
Before the hour. Anita is listening on KTNF in Minneapolis. Hey, Anita.
Hi, Malloy.
Hi, how are you?
Real fair. The Haitians had a solution. They were self-sufficient, Mike. You forgot to throw in what Clinton's the one that broke them. Because she said, "I'll give you back your seat."
Well, very quickly, I did include Clinton in this history last week. I went over a lot of detail in Haiti's history, going all the way back 220 years up to the present. A, B, Haiti was not self-sufficient when, at any time during its history since the slave revolution.
Yeah, they were 30 years ago. They at least could grow their own food.
Well, but I'm sorry, I'm going to differ with you on this one, because the food being grown, first of all, the farmers that were growing food were put out of business with
Right,
but prior to that, because of global policies against Haiti, it's never been. Self-sufficient to the point. I'm not going to make that statement. I would say this. If you would ask people in Haiti 30 years ago, are you satisfied with your life? I'm guessing the answer would have been no. This is during the time of, Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc Duvalier, who stole the country blind, whose, private, thug army of the Tom Tom Makut, killed 60,000-70,000 Haitians who begged to, or, differ with the Duvalier family that was put in place by the French and kept there. So I'm going to disagree with you, Anita, where it concerns Haiti 30 years ago.
It was something, but that isn't really what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to really say was that they should be so ashamed of themselves, because all these people ever really wanted was freedom, was their freedom.
Right.
And doesn't Obama know these facts? I mean, and to sit there and put Bush and Clinton, ugh.
Well, that's the part that, to me, I have to see as a stomp in the face of Haiti. I'm surprised that a president like Barack Obama, I'm not talking about his race, I'm talking about his understanding of history, that Obama would do this. I don't understand that.
I mean, for what Haiti's going to become. Hades, you know what it's going to become. You're going to have Kentucky Fried Chicken and Pizza Hut and hotels and gambling. And I just cry for what it's going to become. You know, it's going to become European corporatocracy.
Right. Have you seen Avatar yet, the movie?
No, because I think James Cameron is really, boy, he can really make a buck out of other people's misery.
Well, you ought to see this movie. I'm telling you, if you get a chance, and I'm sure it's on the screens in Minneapolis, I'm just saying, you ought to go see Avatar.
I don't see movies, but welcome to Minneapolis when y'all come.
Yeah, we'll be there Saturday night.
All right.
Thanks, Anita. Bye. Take care. If you if you haven't seen Avatar, it's aside. Kathy and I went to see it Sunday night. Aside from the wizardry of, and see it in three dimension. You have to see it in 3D. I don't ever want to see a movie ever again that's not in 3D, especially this technique. It's astonishing. And when the special effects are used to tell the story, It works, you know, special effects just for the hell of it. But there've been a couple of movies with these effects that are just unbelievable. Lord of the Rings, of course, the trilogy was one. But if you haven't seen Avatar, it's a very simple message. But if you find yourself, if you're following the movie and get in with the script that Cameron wrote, you'll find yourself afterwards agreeing that this is probably the most blatantly anti-American film, anti-American policy, foreign policy film ever written. This is kind of up there with, you remember the Three Kings movie? Who was in that? The guy that was in, George Clooney. Was it We Three Kings or Three Kings about the Iraq War? The first one. But this movie is absolutely no holds barred, anti-American. It's set a couple of hundred years in the future, but, it's astonishing. But to sit in a packed theater and not a sound, I mean, there weren't even any popcorn eaters in this film, and we were this is a massive theater in Atlantic Station, which is this huge commercial complex built just slightly northeast of or northwest of downtown Atlanta, and it's almost like a city unto itself. But to sit in that theater with every single seat, how long has the movie been out? This film has been out, what, a month, 6 weeks, something like that? And to sit there with no popcorn bags rattling, no candy boxes moving, everybody sitting there hushed, not a sound. Black, white, Latino, everyone sitting there, not a sound. Totally engrossed, absorbed in this. Now, granted, absorbed in it, maybe not so much the message as the effects of this film, the magic of this film. It kind of made me think about when people first saw moving pictures, a century ago. I read something that, people would go to a theater and they would see a freight train coming towards the camera, and people would flee the theater. They thought it was going to, they couldn't figure out what the hell it was. You kind of get that feeling with this. It's astonishing work. The story itself is, pretty, you could probably write a treatment for this movie on one page. I'm not saying it's a big, complex, involved plot. It's a very simple plot. Matter of fact, it pretty much follows the plot of Alien or Aliens, both of them. Or, the old 50s cowboy and Indian movies. But Star Wars. But it's when you're sitting in the theater quietly, because everybody was quiet, quietly cheering on the people from this planet against the American stormtroopers, when you're the American Marines, the American soldiers who are trying to kill and destroy everything, and you find yourself cheering for the other team, it's weird. It is kind of weird. I mean, we can sit here every night and talk about destructive U.S. foreign policy, destructive U.S. Domestic policy. But we also have to acknowledge the brainwashing that we've gotten. A, B, that belief that you and I still have that there's something great and unique about this country. So when you're sitting there watching this film and you're hoping that these American gunships actually do get blown out of the sky, and but you can't cheer each time one of them gets blown out because you're cheering the death and destruction of your own people. I mean, that's pretty weird. And the people being blown to pieces are like the people in the audience. They're black, Latino, and white. It's weird. If you haven't seen this film, I recommend it. Absolutely. David is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, David.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fine. We talked before.
Yeah.
There's a few things I'd like to let you know about, made up a couple of words. You know, they were running a parallel between genocide and the health insurance companies, so I made up a special word for them called claimicide.
All right. I like that.
And the GOP does have a cure. Some of the menus that serve it up is the guy that owns Fox News.
Murdoch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his publications.
Right.
And his cure is chicken hawk soup.
Yeah. I go with that.
So... that was a couple of interesting pieces. You know, there's a company here in Michigan. They did an ABC special on it, and I think Maddow had it on tonight.
Yeah, and we talked about it during the last hour, or the first part of this hour. The one that makes the gun sights and puts biblical sayings on them. It's incredible. Hey, Dave, I have to leave it there, man. We have a break. Or I'm David. Yeah, David. David in Grand Rapids. Thanks for checking in. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, excuse me, ten before the hour, Dave is in Minneapolis. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. I'm looking forward to seeing you Saturday night here.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I want to emphasize what Brad was talking about you know, candidates not conceding too early. I mean, we had the Frank and Coleman thing going here.
Right.
And Al was behind at the initial point, but ended up winning by just a few hundred votes. I don't remember what the number was, but, you know, it's important to hang in there and actually count the paper ballot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God.
Yeah. If we hadn't done that, I mean, things would be way different
in
Congress or the Senate, actually. And, you know, Al has done quite a bit of good work since he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
Being a new guy. And, I mean, the guy knows the issues. You know what's going on out in the real world.
Well, I'd certainly agree. You know, I may have some issues with Al Franken based strictly on our association. We both worked at Air America, but that has nothing to do with his ability as a senator. I'm glad to see that he's doing some of the things that he's done so far, especially trying to get a law passed that says when American corporation employees commit rape overseas of other American employees or not American employees, that there should be no law shielding them from prosecution as there is now. And I'm sure he's done, made efforts in areas other than that. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you checking in, man. Crazy Tom is in El Monte, California. Hey, Crazy Tom.
Yeah, hey, first of all, I want to say that you do offer suggestions, and me and a lot of my friends are inspired by you. And so I have to get that off my chest first.
Okay.
And every time I call you in, I hear 27 things I got to talk about, and I just don't know what to focus on because I'm crazy. But okay. I want to say...
Try your best here.
Well, you know, I think that this Coakley thing, right?
Right.
It's
right.
A big issue. I think it's a really big issue. I mean, and I think she's going down. I mean, and you know what? We've got to get to 51. I say you have one of your suggestions that you said for years. We've got to grow a pair. We have to grow a pair. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Democrats.
We have to grow a pair.
Yeah. Democrats have got to start acting like they have a vested interest. I'm talking about rank and file Democrats, a vested interest in how they're governed. And the first order of business, in my opinion, is to throw these Democrats out of office who are really Republican light. And
I heard she did terrible campaigning. I heard she did really terrible campaigning.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her, but I've heard the same thing. And if that's the case, that allows someone like this this other guy, the Republican, to slip in under the radar. It's my understanding that he is, you know, he's really out there on the fringe. He's one of these teabag religious right freaks who's just waiting to get in there and start committing as much damage as he can.
Well, one more thing before I get off. I have friends, and we're trying to organize. Okay, we're trying to organize an October surprise. With the liberals somehow coming together. I mean, if I can get 100 people, I'll be happy. If I can just start off with 100, you know, and then meet and get a hotel reservations in Washington and make a protest, a little 100 people.
Well, you
How
know,
about 100 people show up?
Well, you know what you have to do? You have to, first of all, you have to get the word out. The only way that most of us can, and that's using the Internet. So get to work.
Well, talk on the Mike Malloy show.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that gets the word out because I heard you're in China.
Yeah, well,
you know, around the world, around the United States, I hear you, and I push it.
Well, but
anyway, I love you, man. Keep doing what you're doing, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot, Crazy Tom. But if you want to do something like that, really, get a website. See what you can do, right? Norm is driving in Iowa, listening on XM. Hey, Norm.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, my friend?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing fine. I just want to thank you for being the man you are, and I really appreciate all the things that you do and say. I wish more people would speak out like you. I understand, Mike, where you're coming from on the field hospital that the Israelis are operating in Haiti. Earlier today, I heard on Call Israel Radio, on World Radio, that they had only sent 5 people. I don't know how they ended up with a hospital, but all that may be true. I just want to bring up the hypocrisy of Israelis trying to save Haitians, which is correct and right. However, they're at the same time destroying the whole population of Palestinians, not just in Gaza, but all over the West Bank and 1948 Palestine.
Well, if you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know that my position is pretty much in line with yours. Immigrant Jews who moved into Israel have turned Israel into an apartheid state, not unlike South Africa was for so many decades. By the same token, I find it difficult not to acknowledge when a nation does something good. I get your point. I understand perfectly. And it's very fair to criticize Israel's domestic policies, just as it is fair and proper to criticize United States domestic and foreign policies, which is not to say that the United States never, ever, 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 ever does anything well or proper or just, because United States policy in certain instances have, policies have been that way. But overall, U.S. foreign policy has been destructive. Overall, Israeli policy against the Palestinians has been utterly destructive. So I hear what you're saying. The reason I mention the field hospital is because while the United States government stands around with its thumb up its ass, the Israelis just move in and get the job done because they're working on a humanitarian effort, as do other countries. It's the juxtaposition of those two points of view. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.